This is CliffCentral.com.
What are the words? What is he singing? What is he singing there? I don't know.
You should know. You play that song all the time.
What lovers do. I want to see what he's singing. I need to know what those lyrics are.
He says, hey,
yeah, exactly. You see?
He says that a lot.
Why is it when you sing, you go into a lisp? It's all...
Well, when this...
Tell me if you love me or not. Love me or not. Love me not.
Also vocally gifted like you, sir.
Oh, tell me if you love me or not.
Yeah, I've been... I've been wishing for you. It sounds like...
Just like lovers do.
Who sings it?
Maroon 5.
Oh!
Mabale Moloi.
What?
Who did you think it was?
Like the Weeknd or something?
You thought that was the Weeknd.
I've been wishing for you.
He's too Weeknd, too falsetto-y.
Okay, but then that's not a far-fetched thing for me to think.
If the Weeknd were to produce a song like that, like that guy would be lynched.
Jeez.
No, I don't think so. Twitter that's not a shit song. Shut up, Ben. Ben, you are such a pain in the ass.
Gareth, are you looking to attract 13-year-old girls?
I'm surprised both your cats and Daniela haven't left you and locked you in a toilet downstairs and told the fire people that there's a dead body.
You live in denial. It's the difference.
Gareth, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Gareth. I also have to agree with Ben.
I would take Charlie Poof's offcuts than that song.
All right. You know what?
Another one you like.
Thank God it's over.
Can you imagine Gareth when he wakes up in the morning?
It's an earworm. That's going to be stuck in my head for the day.
Right. Good song, right, Mabali? Want to hear what's going on in Ben's head right now?
The music video is even dumber.
Sure, of course. You've watched the music video. See those lines.
You want to hear what's... Here's the music in Ben's head right now.
Here comes a good joke.
This or what lovers do.
All right, I got a great email here yesterday from somebody.
Okay.
They listen to us every morning, and his name is Ricardo. He says, I just want to thank you and the team for entertaining and informing us about the interesting times we live in. I know you're a man of history, so I thought, why not start a history podcast about South Africa and Cliff Central? It could be cool to discuss the good and the bad of our history, and will also help people to understand our current events better. You explain and discuss history so easily because you love it. By the way, the earphones are great. Yeah, so he loves the earphones. That's the main reason. I don't know. I mean, we do, you know, I cover a bit of history every now and then on the show, and I feel like that's enough. If I had to do an actual history podcast, there are so many guys who are doing it. It's their whole life. It's their whole job. That's like Dan Carlin. And I don't know if I want to do that. And you have to do major amounts of research, because if you're going to do a history podcast, it can't just be the stuff I remember. As much as I remember a lot of history as compared to, you know, how to add mental arithmetic.
Yeah, I mean, I had that problem with the kids of history. It took so much research.
It's massive research. So you have to spend hours putting it together. And look, I mean, I'm not saying it's out of the question, but it's not going to be me. If there's someone who you know who just tells the most amazing stories and who's really good at because history can be dreadfully boring if it's told by a boring person or if it's told in an uninteresting way. It can be riveting if it's told by someone who knows what they're doing. And you have to know those stories inside out. You have to know the characters inside out. You have to be able to live in the shoes of a Shaka Zulu or a Julius Caesar or, you know, Christopher Columbus. You have to be able to inhabit that person's time and be able to explain what kind of world they live in. And I don't know that I could do that as well as some people. You've got to know your strengths. Let's turn our attention to some news. Mubs, go ahead.
All right. So you hop on a plane. You take off, relatively smooth takeoff. You start thinking about all the things that you need to get done once you land at the destination. And then 20 minutes into the flight, a loud explosion.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Gareth farting.
No, that was yesterday.
A Southwest Airlines jet was 32,000 feet over suburban Philadelphia when a rare engine explosion caused a passenger's window to burst.
Oh.
Partially pulling the woman sitting next to the opening out of the plane. She was literally being sucked
How are we laughing at this?
No, because she's fine. Because she's fine.
Guys, yeah. If this was happening next to you, this would be the funniest thing you'd ever seen. At the time, disaster, sure. But can you imagine when you get home and tell your friends this story? You would wet yourself. Okay, I would.
Fellow passengers frantically worked together to yank her. To yank her back inside the airliner as it depressurized and quickly descended thousands of feet per minute. And this is according to the events that have been given by the passengers who were on board. Wow. So the frightening ordeal played out on Tuesday morning, American time, on a Southwest flight headed for Dallas. The Boeing 737 was about 20 minutes into its journey from New York when the engine failure occurred. Yo. The plane was carrying 144 passengers and 5 crew. It then diverted to Philadelphia International Airport, where it made an emergency landing at around 11:20
a.m. Did they pull her out of the window?
Guys. You know, I mean, it's sad because there was one passenger who died, but they're still trying to figure out what the cause of death there was. It looks like it might have been heart failure or something.
Yeah, from laughing
so
much.
Everybody else on that plane was fine, including the woman who was being sucked out of it. And this pilot with one engine having exploded managed to execute an emergency landing that didn't kill all of them on board. I mean, it's amazing.
Worse, imagine if you are the perfect size to work as a plug in the airplane explosion. So they're like, listen, we can't exactly take you out right now because all of us will die. So how about you just stay there until we land?
I don't know. I don't think you'd be able to last in that position.
No, you wouldn't live.
You would eventually be yanked out of that plane with the air pressure and
all
that
stuff. Also, you can't breathe. Cause I assume her head went out first, right?
I don't know what part of her body went out first, Gareth. But, I mean...
imagine if this...
No, but imagine if you are sitting next to her. And there she goes. She's being sucked out of... And you are next to her. And you're like,
I don't know what I would do. I'd laugh. I'd have to laugh. I mean... Especially when she's back in, I would like burst into a fit of hideous laughter. It's too ridiculous.
I mean, apparently there were passengers who started texting family members to say, listen, I'm on this plane. I don't know what happened. There was a large explosion. Yeah. And now things are chaotic on board. And I don't know if I'm going to make it home. And I love you. And tell the kids that I love them too. It must have been hysterical.
No, well, she can't say any of that because her head's out. I would assume it's her head.
No, I'm talking about the other passengers. Oh, yeah. Because they then had to divert to go and do an emergency landing elsewhere. And like in those minutes in between, you're probably thinking, let me tell my husband that I love him.
Sven Lorenczyk, who we met last week, he's one of the directors at One Plan, is going to pop by. Remember we spoke last week about how he was going to come and tell us about the national health insurance that they're trying to launch, NHI. It affects everybody, by the way. So you even though you might probably think this is not something that affects you, it's going to. So you need to know what's going on over there, what Aaron Motsoaledi is proposing, how much it'll cost, what it'll cover. And he's been doing a lot of research in this respect. So we're going to talk to him about that. That's coming up at 8:30. I mentioned the earphones just a moment ago. If you want to know where to get them, go to takealot.com. They're only 550 Rand on takealot.com. At Takealot, you can shop online on your phone or on your app anytime, anywhere with cash and delivery payment options and free delivery on your first order. Takealot.com. Shop anything you can imagine at everyday low prices. And they really do have everything on there. Have you been on Takealot lately?
Oh, so much. It's like endless.
For gadgets and things, if that's what you're into. And if you, if you're a gamer, like Takealot's just, it's paradise. You go on there, you fill your trolley with stuff, and then they bring it to you. I love this. I love that you don't have to get in your car. You have to park next to someone in a shopping mall and they open their door on your car. You have to go into some stinking shop. The person at the till's unfriendly.
Oh, coughs at you.
Coughs. You have to push around a trolley with those filthy handles on them. Mm-hmm. Get sick for 3 weeks because you've picked up someone's ass E. coli that they wiped on the trolley. Take a lot's the way to go, man.
And then car guards or just parking.
Yeah.
Can't emphasize enough how dreadful it is.
Yeah. Well, not because we hate the car guards, but because we don't need the car guards. And then you feel obliged to give the guy money. It's a disaster. Rather go to takealot.com and get your earphones there. It's really easy. 10 hours of battery life, built-in microphone, 3-button controller, ergonomic design, plus brilliant sound and build quality. Cliff Central's unwired earphones are the perfect match to your favorite podcasts. Get them on takealot.com now. All right. I got an email the other day from Mike, and Mike said he listens to the show. He likes what we're doing, and he doesn't like the way we're always knocking religion, but particularly Christianity. And he said every time he listens, he thinks we're taking an opportunity to take a swipe at Christianity. So I said, well, look, let's talk about this, because he seems like a thoughtful guy. Seems like the kind of person we could have a conversation with. So, hey, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Good, man. Good, good, good. What's up? First of all, where are you? Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Durban.
Oh, Durban. All right. Yeah. How old are you, Mike?
I'm 41.
What?
41.
Oh, 41. Okay, so you're old like me.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, Mike, I mean, I really appreciate an email like this because we don't always get it right, and sometimes I do climb on a bit of a soapbox and start going on about the things that irritate me, whether it's politics or religion or anything else. So tell me what prompted you to write this email.
Well, kind of what prompted me, it wasn't really just on the anger situation where you're like, Angus is always asking for money and is it like sort of like a money mongering type guy. It is also along the lines of, I think what really spurs me is that a lot of the time you guys don't like to be judged. Like you'll say, Christians will judge people here and judge people there. And I can understand that you do get judgmental Christians. But the thing is, when it comes to a true Christian, a person that's really following the word of God shouldn't be judgmental, because the reason they're Christian is because they realize they fall so far short that they actually need a savior to be saved. And like, I think it was, you're talking about your friends on Easter, I think it was on the Easter weekend, how they hypocritical and they all like holier than thou on that weekend because they want to be forgiven for their sins and all of that. And I think one of the things that I suggest to you is that it's not always to make man your measuring stick, not always to look at the Christian themselves, but rather than looking at them, look at Jesus. Look at the life that he lived. Look at the example that he did as well. The example he lived. If you follow Jesus' example, your moral compass is going to be perfect.
Well,
not all of us are going to get there. We're going to fall short.
You know, forgive me, but I mean, this is a guy who lived 2,000 odd years ago. I do believe that there was an actual Jesus, and I do believe that he must have been a very impressive human being, because otherwise we wouldn't still be talking about him. But what I have a problem with is this is like broken telephone over 2,000 years. We have so many translations. We have so many versions of the story. The four first chapters of the New Testament can't even agree about the circumstances of his birth. So we can't say that we have the facts here at our disposal. What we have is a bunch of stories around someone. And
that is true.
You just saw them bury Winnie Madikizela Mandela, and some people have a certain story and other people have another story, and she was alive just 3 weeks ago. So
sure.
I'm very skeptical when we use any past or present human being as a yardstick for anything. And when it comes to this judgmental thing, I think that's a bit of a straw man, dude, because you and I and everybody else, we judge. That's how we make it through the day. If you walk down a dark alley and it looks like someone might jump out and kill you, you don't walk down the dark alley. That's using your judgment. If you meet someone in business and they look like they're a shifty sort of person who you shouldn't be doing business with, you use your judgment to go, I'm not going to be in business with this guy. This idea of don't judge is something we've never said. Okay. I don't think I've ever had the opinion that you shouldn't judge people. You should judge the hell out of people if you want to live.
Yeah, okay. So on that note, if you have don't look, what I've seen is in the past, you'll say, oh, that Christian was so judgmental. And so you'll say that Christian's judgmental, but then when the shoe fits on the other foot, it's a different thing.
No, I...
And what are the things that you say... Why shouldn't we judge?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we are accountable for that. Now,
I don't agree with you. I'll tell you why, Mike. I mean, I'm responsible. Okay. I'm responsible for my own decisions. I'm accountable for my own decisions. When I do something right and it works, great. If I do something wrong and it counts against me, that's my fault. I take complete responsibility. Mm-hmm. You,
okay. You, can I ask you one question?
You had a guy who hopped on a cross and took all your sins and took them away. That's not responsibility. That's called scapegoating.
You can see it that way if you want to, but if I can just
go back to
the accountability on one thing, please. Let me have my word here. One sec. What you saying is, if you're going to be accountable to yourself, where would your moral compass come from to be?
There's an interesting bit of research that was published just this week about how religious people are not more moral than atheists.
No, absolutely not. I've actually seen it.
Oh, Mike, this line is getting pretty terrible, dude. See ya. See if you can get him back on. Things. I hate this telephone line. Oh, we were having such a good talk. See, I love the yesterday we had Tando in here. She's a model. She's a woman with albinism. She had an interesting story. We got into a real debate. We got into some serious discussion. Like we were having a proper philosophical conversation about things, and I loved that. Some people avoid that stuff. For some reason, people don't want to have real conversations. And this is what I wanted with Mike. And I love it when people disagree with me. And he may have some very good points. I may have none. Maybe I'll learn something from this. That's why I'd love to talk to people like Mike rather than people just agree with me the whole time. Yeah, Mike, you there?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
So yeah, you were busy saying...
You've seen a lot of Christians living terrible lives and so forth, and that's what I was really just about saying before we got cut off. I've actually bounced in German nightclubs for 15 years, close on 15 years, and I've gotten to see people I see on Sunday at church raising their hands, praising God. I've seen them on the Sunday doing drugs and drinking alcohol and living debaucherous lives. The things that separate the Christian from those people, look, I'm not saying separate them, because everyone's walking their own walk of sanctification. But what will separate a Christian from a person that's not a Christian? You'll see the fruit of their life. If you see someone's life living a certain way, you can see the difference in someone who is following God with their whole heart and someone that isn't.
Mike, how do you know you've got the right version? This is the problem, right? There've been gods before this. There was Zeus, there was Jupiter, there was Apollo, there was Osiris.
Well, for me, that's a pretty simple answer. I'm not claiming to be a theologian by any means, but for me, it would come down to when I got saved, I actually wanted to find out. Before I got saved, I wanted to find out who was the right God.
You got saved? What happened?
Well, let me start from the beginning, right? My mother was very sick at one day. The doctor said, enjoy her while you can. She's got 3 weeks to live or a week to live or something along those lines. I can't remember. I was quite young. I was about 15 at the time.
Yeah.
And my sister was looking for answers, and she went to churches. She went wherever. And she went to a church, and it was actually a Glenridge church, had a meeting with a guy named Rob Rufus. And during the preach, Rob Rufus stopped midway through his preach, and he just started scanning the crowd. He had never met my mother. She was from Australia. He started scanning the crowd, and he pointed to her, and he said, you are very sick, and God wants to heal you. After that, he says, please come and see me after the service. I want to pray for you. After the service, my mother was feeling sick. It was about 45 minutes later. She just wanted to go home. She says, just take me home. I want to die. And before this, she hadn't kept
me down. I hate to interrupt at this point, but if someone is feeling that shitty during a church service, it's easy to pick them out of the crowd and say, that person's sick.
Yeah, well, okay, let's put it that way. If you want to see it that way, no problem. But let me finish the story, and then you can tell me what you think of this. So she went to, after the service, she said, I just want to go home. I want to go home and die. She hadn't kept food down for close to 7 or 8 months. She'd been in and out of hospital. I think she was weighing about 14 pounds at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We started walking her out the church. He came to her, and he sat on the shoulder. He said, look, God's not finished with you. And he says, can I pray for you? So he said, yeah, sure. And his words were simple. He just said, in the name of Jesus, be healed. From that moment, my mother was almost instantly healed. On the way home, she was like, I'm actually craving cheese puffs. I still remember it to this day. Not the cheese puff, just the cheese puff pastry. We got two stuffed pastries, and from that day, she started to keep food down. And from that day, when the doctors could not believe she would still be alive, she was. So that got me now just deciding which God is real. Is this the Jesus? Yeah. Is this that's the right God?
Okay, so I mean, this is
the right God.
Sure. So this is based on your personal experience. I mean, there are plenty of people who've had experiences with other gods, and their personal experiences are they're the only ones who could prove that they're true or not, right? Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, then I think it comes down to the definition of the God then.
Okay, but like why would you...
God, but that, like if I was, yeah?
Mike, that's great. It worked out for you and your mom, and you believe in this stuff. Why would it bother you what we say about Christians? You say you're better than other Christians because you're saying just now that you see all these people.
I never said I was better.
Hang on a second. You said that you see these people and they're drinking and they're taking drugs and all this stuff. Now that's you say they're not the real Christians. You say you are. That's what you said.
What I said on a different walk of sanctification. They probably some of them could be new Christians.
Mike, it's different words. You're saying the same thing. You're saying I'm this kind of Christian. They are that kind of Christian. That's what you're saying.
I think you're twisting my words. Let me rephrase that in case I may have worded it wrong. So I am a little nervous being on radio. Maybe my words are getting a bit tongue-tied. You'll get people that proclaim to be Christian, but they're living like dentists. Like you said, your friends that would be holier than thou on Easter weekend, right? And then you see them doing this and that during the week. You can't be licentious. You can't live a licentious life and then just go to God and say, oh, lack of peace, forgive me.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of Christianity for some people.
And then if they do that, they're not following the word of God. Because God will clearly warn you. It says, I think it's Hebrews 10, verse 26. I don't want to quote Bible scriptures because
you just did.
You've got your issues on the Bibles and so forth.
Yeah.
But as a Christian, we hold on to that.
Sure.
And it will say,
if you
deliberately continue sinning after you receive knowledge of it, right.
You know what? I don't have a problem. Listen, dude. I have no problem with you or your religion or what you believe or the Bible verses. I don't have any problem with that. I've got lots of friends who are very, very nice people. They are good friends of mine. I respect and love them, and they also happen to be Christian. Not a big deal. It really isn't. I just wonder why, if I have an opinion that's different, it upsets you. I mean, you've got your relationship with God, right? You've got this very real thing that you believe in that makes your life busy and fulfilled and, you know, it saved your mother's life, and it means something to you. What do you care that some douchebag in Johannesburg has an opinion that's different to yours? It shouldn't bother you, just like your religion doesn't bother me. Hold on, let me finish for a second. So what I get irritated by is when I see these good people who are they mean well. They're looking for meaning, the same stuff that you were looking for when your mother was sick. And they get taken advantage of by these charlatans, like these Benny Hinn's and these guys with these jets and these mega churches with these crooks.
Yes, absolutely, and I 100% agree with you there. But again, then it comes down to, like what I said, you'll see the fruit in their lives. You'll see who's following and you'll see who's not. You'll see who's following the word of God. But if I can just say, you asked me what prompted me the phone. The first thing was when you were talking about Angus, and you said it was, I think it was angry at Cape Town, so that's why it wasn't raining. Am I correct?
Yeah, he said it was the gays.
Yeah, I believe your sister said that. But let's just go one back. Before that, I don't know Angus. I've been to one of his Mighty Men conferences. I enjoyed it. It kind of wasn't for me, the camping and all of that, but that's the side.
Yeah.
From what I just did a little bit of research on it. That meeting that he had at Mitchell's Plain, did you know that there was no offering off? There was no entrance fee for anyone. No one had to pay to go.
Yeah, it's called PR. Sometimes there's an opportunity. Dude, listen, I don't want to talk about it. I want to get Angus back in here so I can actually get into his head and figure out what he's trying to get.
That would be fantastic.
I would love to do that.
And
anyway, Mike.
I enjoy the show, but what really is offensive.
Mike, this line is terrible. Listen, we've got to find a better way of talking to you next time, but I do appreciate your call. And I'm sorry, I'm frustrated that it sounds as bad as it does. A lot of people can't hear you. I appreciate the email. Keep talking. What I love is that you can have opposing points of view and not have to hate each other. Really. If you don't like what I'm saying, please fight with me like Mike does. I love that. I don't consider that a bad thing. I mean, he's got an interesting point of view, and it's a personal experience too. I can't say that that's not true. For him, it's true. I get it. But I do. Did you hear? You know, Billy Graham, that televangelist, died in America.
What was his?
Do you know which one he was?
Claim to fame again.
He was the one who all the presidents would go to when they were in trouble.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Billy Graham died. It was March. He died in February. February the 21st. So Jim Baker, who's a complete crook, like a charlatan, he's the one who sells those Jim Baker foods for when the world ends. He sends those prep packs, and millions of people buy these things. And he, you know, I kind of get the feeling like a lot of South African would-be evangelists are trying to be as big as these guys, but they don't have the market share. You know, if they could sell foodstuffs, they would. And these guys, they go on TV or they go on radio or whatever, and every day they're telling everybody the world's about to end. And this is Jim Baker. Now, he starts crying when he remembers Billy Graham. But you've got to hear this, because I don't believe this is real emotion for a second. Maybe I'm cynical. I think this guy's just putting on a big show. Listen to this.
Today, I was awakened by the sad news that the man who has preached in person to more people and won more souls to Jesus Christ than any other man has died. My friend, Billy Graham, and a friend to millions, has gone to be with the Lord today. Billy Graham was born in 1918 and has left this earth today, February 21st, 2018. The year he was born ends with an 8. A number that means a new beginning. A beginning, surely, for Billy Graham, whose birth was a new beginning for the world, as he would lead millions and millions to Christ, like no other man before him. Today, in the year.
Let me just skip ahead.
With his Savior, Jesus Christ.
Because he comes up now, he starts on this.
He has led to the Savior. Billy Graham walked with and ministered to the leaders of the world. He prayed with every president during his ministry years. He ministered to everyone from royalty to the lowest of the low. I know this because at my lowest moment, Billy Graham walked into my prison, threw his arms around me, and he said, "Jim, I love you." The day before, I heard on the...
By the way, this guy was locked up for fraud, for defrauding people. So this is his story. He's like, he's hopping on the Billy Graham bandwagon now. But you hear that? You hear that emotion? He's like, yeah, there's a gap for me now. Billy's gone. I can sell more food parcels.
Oh, no.
1918.
Yeah, it's a long time, huh?
Was he 100? No, guys.
Are we really bringing up maths here?
Wait, how old was he?
Are we going to do maths?
The year 1918.
Are we doing
maths?
He
was born 1918. He died 2018. So he was how many?
Yeah,
that sounds about
right. All right, here we go. Mathematics. Take it away, Mubs.
If he was born in 1918.
Billy Graham. Let's check out the birth dates and the death dates. Let's look this up.
Was he 100? He was 100.
Wait, was he 100?
He was 100.
No, it would have been news reports, right?
No, come on.
Okay, November 1918 to February 2018. It's 100 years.
Wow.
I can even figure that out. This is genius. I even got a sum right.
Yes,
yeah, it's 100 years.
Guys.
Jeez, that took us a long time.
Three of you working that out is just absolute treat for me.
Wow. Technically, he died at 99, technically.
Oh, okay.
Well done, Sia.
All right, so I mean, he lived.
Full house of correctness here.
I know.
That was so good in terms of mathematics.
That was so good. All right.
So sad.
Gareth, I agree. It's good to have your view about religion, but it shouldn't have to offend other people. Sometimes you sound like an atheist. Sometimes, I'm so glad you took this guy on, Gareth. He's such a pompous ass, saying he's better than everyone else. His religion is better. You see, people, everybody has an opinion, right? And I'm not upset. I don't think he's a pompous ass. I think he's someone who really wants to engage on this. I've been in many conversations with these newborn Christians, and they spew Bible verses to justify how evolution is wrong. And you can't argue with them, and they say that the gays are responsible for all the bad things. And you're either bad or you're a dickhead. Don't hide behind a church and steal money from people. Some people saying, you know, you can't be intolerant. I don't care about any of that. I think you've got to be, like, judgmental in life. That's what keeps you alive.
Critical thought is vital.
No, but I think most of us are judgmental in any case.
Sure,
and we probably struggle with the fact that that is one of our traits. But we are very judgmental against each other.
I mean, sure. Jesus said that
every day of our lives.
Ooh, Jesus said
okay.
That you got to love your neighbor. That is a good rule, and we should try to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't say do not judge, because that's a dumb rule and it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. It's like in the Ten Commandments, it's good to say thou shalt not kill. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing for us to live by.
It's and bloody
we should
obvious,
try.
Though.
We should really try very hard not to kill. But not coveting thy neighbor's ox, that negates the economy. Like, if Mabali comes here with her great ox, I'm gonna covet the hell out of that ox.
I've never thought of it that way, but I don't think.
No.
Well, my interpretation of it isn't that.
What do you mean?
My interpretation of it is really in a more, call it esoteric or whatever you will. It's more like be grateful for what you have, be grounded in what you have, appreciate your life.
No, but you're not talking. Listen, remember when this was
That's
written?
That's our interpretation.
Those Ten Commandments were written for a bunch of savages. Really. These were people who were killing each other and carrying on like you can't believe. Just escaped from even worse people, the Egyptians, who were oppressing them. We're not talking about severely evolved, extraordinarily thoughtful, sensitive, philosophical people. We're talking about people who, like when Moses came down the hill with those tablets, they were busy dancing around a statue and having sex with each other and paying zero attention. Remember? We're not talking about sophisticated people here. Don't interpret stuff that's very literal.
True. And I think, obviously, with so much time that has passed, you can't take what is written in some of our holy books so literally. No.
Well,
yeah,
exactly. If you were to read a You magazine from 1987, I'm going to be the most
did
confusing
thing in the
world.
The holy book of any religion to the You magazine
more
edited
people,
by Esmerie.
Yes, more people probably read You.
But
in this country.
Unfortunately, the line with Mike wasn't great. But one thing I might have picked up, or I might have got it wrong, was that he was saying that Jesus gives you the perfect modal compass. But I disagree. I think we give our own perfect modal compass. Like, I know if I come in here and I start acting like a complete and utter prick, I don't need Jesus to sort that out for me. Mm-hmm. I know I'm acting like a prick. And if you can't have that yourself, then, well, you're going to be a train smash.
But if you believe in Jesus, he does give you that moral compass.
Sure, I get that, but like, we must not forget that we are mostly disasters, okay?
Mostly,
we are. And to think that we can be now holier than now because we found someone to guide our way. How about guiding ourselves? Like, you look at kids.
Because we're disasters.
But
I'm just playing the devil's advocate
but I mean,
by the way.
But by accepting that, then we find a way to improve ourselves rather than just stringing onto someone else the whole time. Like, you look at kids. Kids don't grow up racist, bigoted, or sexist. None of those things, right? Politics and religion, it gets into their minds, and essentially that's why we become massive fuck-ups.
Well, also their parents.
And, well, because their parents.
their parents are hugely
The parents have already gone through the system of religion and politics.
Yeah.
Look, so when kids go through this, now you want to put Jesus in his head, her head.
Nah, look, let people do what they're going to do. They're going to be a disaster sometimes anyway, no matter how much good you try
but
to put
But we must accept
in.
Our disaster and become
better
and by
And they're
going
to be, and good, listen. I've always said, good people will try to do good things, bad people will try to do bad things. Nobody's always good and no one's always bad. Sometimes you could have a friend who's the nicest person in the world and you find out at some point that they steal. Or you find out that their business is a scrap metal business and you know where they get that. You could have been great friends with Radovan Krecher, always having a good time at his house. What a nice man. Good to his kids.
Sure. When he's not
balance.
Killing people.
Right.
You know, when he's not killing people, he's such a
See
nice
I mean?
Man.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
And you could have these people who are terrible people, but they could, in a moment of charity and kindness, like rescue someone from a fire or something. Nobody's always good and always bad. We like to see things as a movie where there's the bad guy and there's the good guy. It's not that easy. People are complicated. I mean, even horrendous misogynistic racists can sometimes do the right thing. And even people who think that they're always right and who are always doing as many of the good things as possible can sometimes do the wrong thing. Mm. That's how it works. And I don't think that that has anything to do with religion or with the law. It for some people, it just comes naturally to try and follow the rules. And for some people, they just like to break the rules. Who knows? Well, you got to decide where you fit in that spectrum, man. I can't tell you. I don't know the answers. I'm as lost as anybody. Just try not to get naked in public. I believe that's bad.
Oh.
I believe that's not, that doesn't get you a lot of points.
Not unless you're in a strip club. Then it's definitely okay to get naked in that public space.
But wouldn't it be fun? You know these Avengers, they all have to have their own little thing. It's like any entertainment act. What if one came out with the comprehensive modern Ten Commandments?
Well, that'd be pretty fun. Be a very good move.
Maybe that's what we should do tomorrow.
Here's an interesting message. You people are retarded when it comes to maths.
Hey, now, baby. Look, I can add, I get these things. Don't you dare lump me in with these things.
How dare you?
Yes, we are terrible at mathematics. We can't do the mathematics.
Do you know who has to be really good at maths? Because otherwise they're not going to be able to calculate any kind of profit into their business. Because if you are bad at maths and you're an actuary, Mubs, you, first of all, you can't become an actuary if you're bad at maths. I remember one dude who was at school with me. He was a maths genius. Guess what he did?
He became an actuary.
Right. Because they snap him up like hotcakes. Mm. If you can figure out those risks and those margins, and you can see how to put an insurance business together, you are in the very top percentile of smart people when it comes to figuring out numbers. And Sven is one of those people. We spoke to Sven just last week from One Plan about, we spoke about a bunch of things, but mostly like winter diseases and what the big claims are for winter. Found out some interesting facts. People slip and fall more in the winter. I didn't know that. And today we thought we'd talk about the National Health Insurance, because everyone is bandying this term about like they know what they're talking about. Aaron Motsoaledi doesn't waste an opportunity to get on TV and to start grandstanding about how he's going to make universal free basic education, basic healthcare available to everybody. But is it even possible? And before you think, oh, well, this doesn't affect me because I've got a private medical aid, or because I don't have any medical aid, I'll just take whatever they give me. It'll be better than nothing. Don't be ignorant, because this is exactly wrong. This is going to affect all of us. And I thought, rather than just make it up or debate stuff that we don't understand, let's get Sven in. Sven Lorencik, how are you, sir? Nice to see you.
I'm excellent. Thank you very much. Just that intro was very misleading.
Why?
Because I'm not the clever mathematician stats guy. We have those guys. Yeah. I'm not that guy. I'm silly when it comes to numbers.
See proof that people like you and me can actually get somewhere in
life. Exactly. Can actually earn a decent living in this world.
But they are smart, right?
They're super smart. Actuaries are. Absolutely. Yeah.
And probably a bit socially inept.
You know, they, I don't want to be the one saying it. You said it, but they definitely savants in a certain respect. So
do you have to pay a lot of money for these people?
Yeah, absolutely. And
because they're rare, right?
Yeah, they're rare. And I think, you know, to find the right person with the right blend of skills, you know, because you need some business aptitude. You need to have the statistical analysis and that ability. So to find the person that matches your business and that understands your business the best. Yeah. They're few and
far between. Them all in a pen together.
And we throw in some colored markers and let them draw on the walls, and we'll see what comes out.
Sounds terrific. I've actually got to come and see your offices. You've got this very sexy building, which is just at the Buccleuch interchange.
Yeah, yeah. So you can actually see it from the freeway. And
I know sometimes I get stuck in traffic and I have to look at it for a whole half hour.
Which is a good thing, right? Which is a good thing. Yeah. So I think our offices are pretty cool. I think it's, you know, insurance businesses can be super boring, but I think it's quite a fun environment. You know,
well,
I think
it's one of the reasons we like to talk to you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right. So Sven, let's get to the business.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about this national health insurance, and I've heard various people who I regard as being fairly clued up. Mm. Tell me, there's no way we can afford this.
So I think something that you touched on right in the beginning is probably one of the most important messages that people should take away today. national health insurance, whether it happens or not, so you can either be a hater or buy into it, it is going to have an absolute profound effect on every single South African. And I think this is one of those examples where the philosophy of universal healthcare for all is great. Can the implementation actually occur, and are there challenges? Yes, absolutely, there's challenges. But the reality is, and this is the same with many pieces of legislation that are being promulgated, it's going to happen. It's just a question of when is it going to happen? Is it going to work or not? So the our view on it is rather embrace the philosophy and rather try and make it work rather than be resistant and just say, well, it's simply not going to work. So develop an ETOL philosophy.
Is there a consensus between insurance companies when it comes to health insurance companies around the NHI?
Yeah, so I think there's certain fundamental challenges that NHI faces. You mentioned the affordability part of it. And through the various iterations of the NHI green paper, and there's been two white papers. I brought one along today. It's like 80 pages.
Sent it to me last night.
So you obviously read it. So
first page and I was asleep.
Well, there you go. Who needs sleeping tablets, right?
This is why
read the NHI white paper, and there you go.
You're here to help us. You're our filter.
Yeah.
You're going to give us the salient
points.
Exactly,
I will. So just going back, is there consensus? So there's consensus that it's got challenges. There's that consensus. Yeah. But is it the right thing to do for South Africa? Absolutely, I think it is. I think just because of the inequality, the parity between rich and poor, I definitely think that there is a place for it.
Yeah.
And provided we can, and this is going to be the central theme of what I'm going to talk about, is to say, provided that business and government can partner in order to make it work, or at least give it a good shot, I think we're in with a possibility. But certainly at the moment, historically, it's been a question of the government and legislature trying to ram a piece of philosophy and legislation down everyone's throats.
Never going to work.
And that's not going to work, right? So that's the pushback.
You actually have a role outside of One Plan. You're on some board of people who are, I don't know, in control of the health insurance industry.
Like the Illuminati for insurance.
Sort of, you're a member of this. What is it?
No, so there's something called the South African Insurance Association.
Right.
And as part of that, there's various forums within the South African Insurance Association. I sit as the chairman of one of those forums.
Okay.
And that forum in particular deals with something called the demarcation regulations and to try and demystify that, that word. I suppose what government is trying to do is say there is this disconnect between what medical schemes are, what health insurance is. So how do we create a unified approach to what that is? And that ties into NHI, because the way medical schemes and health insurers are thought to move, and that's towards a more unified solution, well, that's eventually going to tie in with NHI, because what Aaron Motsoaledi has said is that initially, it was a matter of government's going to do this on their own. We've got this. We're going to lump everyone with some taxes.
Yeah, sure. Like they had Eskom and SAA, and everything they've touched has turned horrendous. So let's just trust them with this one, because they're bound to do this right.
But there certainly has been a paradigm shift from that philosophy to now. All of a sudden, they've understood that there has to be a partnership between medical schemes and corporate and government. And it goes back to what's one of the biggest challenges that NHI faces, but for the financing issue, which we've seen now that there's major gaps in our fiscus that they're trying to bridge with increasing the VAT rate, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the primary issues, and this is subjective, this is my view, this isn't a view that's been heralded by everyone, but the philosophy is great, but shouldn't we start at grassroots? How's NHI going to work if there's major issues in terms of service delivery, in terms of hospitals, in terms of staffing, in terms of training, etc.? And yes, sometimes you need the philosophy as a starting point in order to drive the right behavior. But in my view, we're kind of lacking the right infrastructure in order to get there. That's part of the difficulty. So yes, private public partnership is very necessary, and I think where we should be starting is use that partnership in order to fix what's not working at the moment.
Well, that's a hell of a task, because you've already pointed out, state hospitals, clinics. We know what's just happened in the Northwest with Super Mahumapelo and these Gupta clinics. I mean, it just seems to me that really the government can't run anything properly. and anything that's even remotely parastatal gets ruined.
Yeah.
And sent into debt, and the public end up paying for it. So who would pay for the national health insurance? Well, where is this money going to come from?
Yeah, the simple answer is we would. So there's various funding mechanisms that have been suggested, but the most obvious one is raise taxes. You know, that's how you're going to get there. That's how you're going to get to the 250 billion rand that they need in order.
250 billion rand. This is not a small amount of money in any country, but in ours, where we have a depressed economy, where we have huge unemployment, this is going to be a tax too far for a lot of people. Now, isn't it sensible in any situation to let people decide for themselves? If I want to come to one plan and let you guys cover my health insurance, and I'm prepared to pay whatever it is that you quote me, then that's my voluntary entry into the market, and I'm covering myself by coming to you. If I don't want it and I can't afford it, then I don't get health insurance.
Yeah. So I mean, what you've just touched, I'm obviously speaking with two hats here. The one is kind of the understanding the regulatory framework, and the other one is my, you know, corporate commercial hat. But that is the cornerstone of what we believe as health insurers. We're saying that, you know, we buy into the socialistic aspect of what medical schemes and,
well,
you know.
I don't.
Yeah,
I think it's bullshit.
Well, so do we. You know, we think it's crap, because if you are younger and healthier and you have a very good risk profile, why should you be penalized for someone that's older and more sickly? I mean,
why should Sia have to pay for 20 other people's healthcare because he's earning money and they're not? Right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and that's our entire viewpoint about why medical schemes and NHI, whilst great in philosophy, might be flawed when you look at an individual's risk profile, but also affordability.
So how likely is it that this is going to happen in the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, well, let me give you the chronological pathway that has been suggested in the white paper. So by 2013, we should have a
2013?
Sorry, 2030.
Oh, 30.
We're not going back in time. This is back to the future. Sorry,
Aaron Mazzaletti's built a time machine.
My bad.
Okay, 2030.
The DeLorean.
2030? Yeah.
So by 2030, we should have a fully functioning NHI system.
Now, 12 years from now?
Well, that's the point.
What's the bet they can't even get Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital working by 2030?
You know, and so again, it goes back to what I said earlier. The only way you're going to get on this path of even trying to remotely hit the 2030 date, you know, you've got to work with corporates. You've got to work with, you know, what's working at the moment, private healthcare facilities, in order to try and bridge that gap. And yes, there has been an attempt by government. They've started this forum, created this forum called NEDLAC. And that is supposed to be a partnership between corporates and government. They're supposed to sit down and have a look at the white paper, the philosophy, and try and work get to a more realistic model of implementation.
Do you get the impression in your interactions with government, and I don't want you to prejudice yourself in any way here, but when you interact with government, do you get the impression that they actually take you seriously, that they consider you equal partners in this, or do you think they look at you as a tap of money they can turn on if they need it and turn off when they don't?
Yeah, you know, what I think it is, I think there's so many legacy issues as a result of this butting of heads between corporate and government. I think, you know, one needs to deal with that first before they take us seriously. I think there's just so much pushback where there's, and I mentioned this earlier, where legislation, philosophy is trying to be driven down onto business, and business kind of going, well, screw you. Like, we're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And
forget business, the average citizen.
Average citizen, you know.
People don't trust politicians. Most people in this country don't vote. They don't care about the system, and they're not interested in being part of it.
Like, I use the ETOL scenario, but it's the one that comes to mind. That's a perfect example.
So tell me the parallels between this and ETOL that you see.
Well, I mean, the parallels just being that it's great. There's a philosophy around what could work, what may be the right thing to do in order to drive revenue generation, et cetera, et cetera. But there's been no buy-in by people. So what do? They attack the legislation. They just boycott the entire idea of ETOLs and they just say, well, screw you. We're just not going to do it. And ultimately, it's you know, it's government with egg on their face by saying we don't have a piece of legislation.
Yeah, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't go around and hold everyone at gunpoint to be a part of NHI.
Yeah, well, and also the odds are stacked against us. And have a look at these other countries like Brazil that have implemented NHI or the NHS in the UK, and all the states that have tried with Obamacare for years.
Okay, let's talk about a foreign example. Is there a sterling example that when you look at it, if you were a legislator, if you had to put your if you were Aaron Motsoaledi, let's say you had his hat on and you had to be the Minister of Health in South Africa and you had to try and find a way to incorporate more people into the healthcare system and make it possible for people to have affordable healthcare or free universal basic healthcare, is there a country, a place, a city, is there anything that you could think of that is a great shining example of where this works?
Yeah, so I speak under correction, but there are certain first world countries or first world economies where it has worked, but there the fundamental difference is there wasn't a huge funding issue. So Brazil is probably the most likened to what we are trying to do, and I can't speak with an amount of authority about whether the Brazilian NHS or NHI works. Well, kind of what I've read is that it doesn't. So I think what we've done is we've tried to take principles, when I say Department of Health, is try to take principles from various other systems and build a philosophy around what it should look like. And, you know, now we're at the stage of, well, what does the implementation look like? So I haven't really answered your question, but...
No, because there isn't an answer, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, I have yet to hear of an example where it works. I've got friends who live in the UK and use the NHS. They have nothing but complaints.
Well,
they hate it.
Yeah, and I suppose you know that hasn't necessarily resulted in a huge downturn in private healthcare. People still want private healthcare because they want to jump the queue. They don't want to sit at a government hospital for months trying to get their pinky fixed. You know?
Well, you hear horror stories.
Yeah, well, so one horror story, and to talk about the inequalities in South Africa. So if you look at the total health expenditure in South Africa, mm-hmm. a frightening statistic is that 50% of the total health expenditure is expended by 16% of the population.
So,
and I'm going to get to a point.
We're not very good at maths, so just go through that again.
Yeah, yeah.
16% of the people use up
50% of the total health expenditure.
Who are these 16%? Are these very, very ill people?
No, so it's when you look at medical schemes, right?
Yeah.
Medical schemes, private health.
Right.
So it's like 8.8 million people that mm-hmm. enjoy the benefit of medical schemes or
in this country.
In this country.
Right.
It kind of leaves like 45 million people outside of it. And that kind of strengthens the point of health insurance as a concept versus medical schemes as a concept. Because what we say is, guys, what about the other 47 million people? How do they afford some sort of access to private healthcare? And that's what health insurance does. So health insurance is a concept. We look at the individual. We risk rate them. We can drive down premiums. You don't have this prescribed...
Yeah, this is where Mabali is more expensive than Sia because she's got the asthma.
Yeah. Yeah.
The asthma. Exactly.
Yeah. The asthma. The lerve.
So how do those 16... I'm very, very concerned.
16%.
Those 16% take up more than half of the money.
Crazy, eh?
What are they doing? Are they going for elective surgeries?
But look at the converse. What are the other people not doing? That's
they're healthy for a start.
No, well, they don't have access to healthcare. That's the problem. So if you look at the other, you know, 84% or whatever it is, those guys just... I mean, they just aren't able to access private or healthcare in general. So you have like another aspect that sets South Africa apart from anyone else is this quadruple disease burden that we have: HIV, TB, and that's something we need to deal with on a more grassroots level rather than looking at NHI for all. You know, so how do we tackle those issues first before we look at implementing a philosophy?
I get very nervous when we think about things like life estimani, and we see how that was handled, and we think, well, you know, it'll all be good if government has the controls at their disposal and they can make our decisions about our health for all of us. We'll be better off. Who would think that based purely on the experience of the last couple of months? And I don't think Aaron Motsoaledi is a horrible human being. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he genuinely cares about people. But the things he's put in place, like this dumb sugar tax, which has done nothing to stop obesity, and will do nothing. Well, it's just a stealth tax.
Yeah, but isn't it an endemic problem generally that we have in South Africa?
Well,
it's just the lack of governance and control.
Yeah, but it's also that no one can be responsible for your health but you. And unfortunately, that means you're going to have to try and make money to pay for your health care when you need it. And if you can't afford insurance... You've got to find a way. You've got to find a way. No one's going to do this for you.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I suppose, you know, the proponents or advocates of NHI would say, well, that is exactly the reason why we need NHI. Because there's so many people that can't afford it. And, you know, so one of the main features of NHI is supposed to be primary healthcare.
Yes.
So what primary healthcare is, it's that initial engagement at a healthcare facility. So GPs, visits, preventative care, et cetera. And the idea is, well, if you sort that out, then it'll prevent all, you know, well, firstly, it'll reduce the quadruple burden of disease, but it'll also reduce the amount of treatment that you might require later on, which is really what spikes the health expenditure. So the accidents, the dread disease, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is what the feature, what a prominent feature of NHI is.
Now, what do they want from you? I mean, do they want you guys to throw in with them?
Yeah. So that's what the suggestion in the last white paper.
They want you to just go to your clients and say, hey guys, we know you've been paying for X and Y and Z, but now we're all going to be incorporated into the NHI.
Yeah.
All that money you've been paying, sorry, it's going into the NHI.
Yeah. So the way I understand
how
it,
how do they figure that's going to work?
No, it's crazy. And it was also, one of the suggestions previously that was made, which is again quite frightening. So medical schemes work on a solvency rate. What that means is that every single medical scheme by law needs to have 20% of the total benefit contributions as a safety net, right? So that's not anyone else's money, but the members' money. So that's 20% of total claims that sits there as reserves. And the suggestion previously by the Department of Health is, well, why don't we just use that?
It's not your money.
Well, it's not your money. You know, and it's those kind of suggestions that kind of make you think, well, hold on, like, are we doing this the right way? I mean, if that's the kind of suggestion, then I'm pretty worried about it. But what did we speak about a second ago?
They want to take the members' contributions and convert that into NHI.
So the way in which I see the philosophy developing is that things like health insurance and medical schemes are meant to fill the gap, rather than be the primary form of cover. So it'll be NHI. So you have benefits that you will derive from NHI. And to the extent that there's a shortfall, then you can rely on your medical schemes or health insurance.
You know, it almost feels like when I'm sitting with my four-year-old nephew and I have to explain to him, that is your sucker and that is your brother's. And his brother's two and he wants both suckers. And I'm like, no, 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 that one's his. This one's yours. You've got to be fair. And he got given that one, so it belongs to him. And this one you got given, it belongs to you. You have to sit down with these government guys and explain to them, like, no, that is not your money. That's those people's money.
And that's, you know, I really don't want to undermine but that's kind of,
it's crazy.
This isn't my view on things. Oh, this is what the documents suggest is the case, which is a little bit worrying.
It's a bit utopian.
Well, it is. And that's what I said right in the beginning, right? So it's a great philosophy. Will it work in practice? Possibly, but it'll require a whole lot of joint venture in order to make that work and kind of being real about what the problems are. I mean, there's in the latest version of the NHI white paper, there's about four pages talking about the problem statement. So what are the inherent problems that we have in South Africa? And they've identified some of them, but they haven't identified all of them. So
it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy. I know that you came here with a very balanced approach, and I may have forced you to argue. I may have forced you to argue one side more than the other, but I do not see how this could be based purely on what government's intentions are. I don't see how it could be effectively implemented, even by 2030. But I couldn't see this happening by 2080.
Yeah. So you know, it's a pipe dream. Well, I am actually a believer. I mean, you wouldn't say so just by the last couple of minutes, but I do believe that it is the right thing to do because of the inequalities that we have in South Africa. All I'm suggesting is that there's got to be a better way of doing it, and the better way of doing it has to be a partnership with business in order to make that work.
I'll tell you what, if you're going to rely on government, you're going to be disappointed like so many people have in the last little while. Therefore, you need to think about your own health, and I would suggest that you make sure that you are covered. Because you never know when something could happen, and you never know when it could happen to you. So, just to throw in a little bit of the commercial message here, Sven, I'll do this for you.
Thank you.
One plan puts healthcare in the hands of you and individuals like you. They provide a great alternative for 80% of South Africans who can't afford traditional medical aid. One Plan products are easy to understand. The claims process is so uncomplicated. They can be processed within a minute using a mobile phone. Through a fast claims process, One Plan helps to get you better quickly. Remember, health insurance, which is what One Plan offers, is the supply of a lump sum that covers hospital care. If you're in an accident, you have a medical emergency or an operation, you're covered. It also covers GP and dentist visits and other medical needs based on your chosen plan. Health insurance is based on your needs. It also covers or offers cover that is usually unlikely to be covered by the medical aid, such as accidental cover, injury to your body, or death cover. The term is self-explanatory. It's taking out insurance on your health. To find out more, go to oneplan.co.za or SMS health to 31664 and One Plan will call you back. SMS health to 31644 for affordable health insurance from as little as 330 rand a month. That's health to 31644.
Oh,
do you like my song?
Yes.
And One Plan will call you back. Easy as that.
I was going to offer to try to sing, but
please don't.
I think let's just.
Everyone's having a great morning.
Sven, would you like me to?
Please don't.
Say no.
I thought you were going to say you want me to sing. I was I'm going to break the studio.
No, both of you, just you be quiet.
31.
Please.
6 4 4. See, I'm varied. I have a wide range. Thank you.
Ben looks like he's about to give you a wide face if you sing it. All right. Thank you, Sven. Nice to see you. Sven Lorenczyk from One Plan. And Ben Mabalesia, we will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Bright and early. We've got Alex van Tonder in an interview we did with Alex about her book not so long ago. You can listen to that coming up just after 8. It's almost time, with less than 3 weeks to go until Chance the Rapper performs live in South Africa. You can catch him along with Shane Eagle, Nadia Nakai, and Frank Cassino. You going, Mubs? A quarter of time. So yeah, you're going.
I will be in a hospitality suite.
Mabali's like, huh, what day is it? Where am I?
Just throwing it out there.
Is it orange? Mabali's like, what? Huh?
Right now she can hear colors.
Was it a girl or a boy? Do you want me to go uphill or downhill or break? Mabali, you're in the studio. It's Wednesday morning.
She really did just
break
out there.
Put in your diary, 30th of April, the next day's a public holiday, so there's no reason to miss out. Get your tickets now at CompuTicket for the Castle Light Unlocks concert. You don't want to miss it. Castle Light Unlocks and their exclusive Chance the Rapper, bitch.
Yo,
I heard it right here.
Oh, that escalated.
All right, unnews time. Let's do this. Here's the stuff you need to know. Don't believe what other people tell you. This is what you need to know. Barbara Bush is dead. That now means that Betty White is the only surviving cast member from the 80s and 90s hit show The Golden Girls. Let's take a moment of silence for Barbara Bush. Whose middle name was what, Mubs?
Billingsberger?
Barbara Billingsberger Bush. That's sorry, we should be respectful. Moment of silence. There we go. All right, good. As many as 250,000 women in Britain are trading sex for accommodation. This is true. It came out in the news today. Overweight, rich male property owners don't have a problem with this, but human rights groups are saying it is a terrible practice. One landlord interviewed said, it's not as widespread as people are making out. Nobody wants to sleep with mingers. So a majority of the population isn't involved here. And finally, Jake White said that Russie Erasmus should pick a predominantly black BOC team to play against Wales. Erasmus responded by saying that some of his best friend's friends are black, so of course he will. He added that he thinks it's offensive that such a topic is even raised around someone like him. That's what you need to know. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent Wednesday in the company of CliffCentral.com. And you can always get hold of us by emailing us. Gareth@cliffcentral.com. You can also email Ben Mubs or Sia if you'd like to. Ben Mabali or Sia at cliffcentral.com. And you can get hold of us on WhatsApp. 0797482090 is the number. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is cliffcentral.com.